plastic now. Doc, I think she's crashing out.
This is WGTDHD. You're listening to Education Matters, the only weekly broadcast in southeastern Wisconsin devoted exclusively to educational issues. Education Matters is co-hosted by Guida Brown, former executive director of the Hope Council, Dr. Steve Brown, retired professor of educational leadership and school law, Dr. Karen Sconsert, chair of the education department and associate professor at Carthage College, Dr. Jonathan Shaler, professor of communications at UW Parkside, and Stephanie Skilba, Vice President for Community and Government Relations at Gateway Technical College. And now, here's today's moderator for Education Matters.
Good morning, everyone. I'm Bob Haggerty. Welcome to Education Matters. I'm very excited to be able to talk to our first guest for Education Matters for me, but before we do that, I want to be able to tell you a little bit about me so you understand the biases that I come to this microphone with. I'm Bob Haggerty. You may know me as the finance guy here at WGTD. I am a Carthage graduate, and that's important today because we're going to be talking to the president of Carthage College. And if you know me, you understand my bias towards education. That's why I was so flattered and honored that David Cole would ask that I'd be able to spend an hour a month with you and be able to talk about a subject that is really near and dear to my heart. As my family says, education means choices. And that's important. I'm lucky enough, fortunate enough to have a wife with a graduate degree as well as five children that are college graduates. And those choices that have given all of us are things that I hope to be able to discuss with you only over the coming days, months, and years. With that, I'm going to introduce now President John Swallow, the president of Carthage College. President Swallow, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, Bob. I'm so glad to be on your show.
And the first, I appreciate that as well. President Swallow coming in 2017, and so you're going into your sixth year.
Finishing sixth year, yes.
Finishing sixth year. Let's talk about what Carthage was like in 2017.
Oh, sure. Yes, looking back, we have to look back before the pandemic. We have to look back quite a bit. Carthage was at a place where it was coming to realize that the educational market, if we call it that, had actually changed fundamentally at the Great Recession, but it takes a while to appreciate that. So if we go back to 2008, 2009, there was a difference in families. There was a difference in their willingness to pay. There was a difference in their interest in programs. And from about then to 2017, Carthage had, for instance, added nursing. Great. Great for the society, great for workforce, great for our students. But the presumption had been that adding nursing would mean 200 additional students. What happened? So we had 200 students who were nurses, but had we not done nursing, we would have been 200 students smaller based on interests, based on our program mix. And so we maintained enrollment by doing a strategic thing, whereas in the past, the demographics were all in our favor. Adding programs meant that we were expanding. And so I'd say in 2017, that was the cusp. Lucky guy me, day one, we have to start wrestling with this. It was the cusp of realizing that things had changed, and then we were really going to have to work harder to make sure we deliver the opportunities our students are interested in.
There's a quote that you're being credited with: critical thinking meeting critical need. Touch on that.
Yes. So different schools are different. I'll just put it that way. But Carthage has always been about, at least since 1870, figuring out what people want in education and delivering it to them. In a wide way. We admitted women in 1870. We taught business classes in 1870. We were never narrow. But these times that we live in, where things are moving faster, people have lots of choices. Families really want to make sure that the dollars they're investing are going to produce a return, and no blame for that. This is just reality. A lot of our students are working. So there's a lot of intense scrutiny on whether, frankly, a four-year investment is going to be the right thing. And so we should work harder to ask, are we offering the right programs? Do we offer the right choices so that students can explore during the 4 years? And, of course, that all of that is going to pay off, that there'll be the corporate connections, there'll be the job opportunities, all of that on the other end. And this is not to say that we don't want broadly educated people who can explore, but given the cost, there has got to be a good return. And the schools focused on that are the ones that are going to do well.
Let's go to your nursing program, because you brought it up. My understanding was there were questions in the beginning. Is nursing something that fits inside of Carthage College?
Yes. That was also I was on the tail end of those conversations by coming in 2017. So again, when I tell the story, Carthage has been about meeting people's need. And for instance, in 1962, when we opened in Kenosha, 300 residential students during the day, but also, people can forget this, 100 adult students at night, 50 students being taught in North Chicago, 18 military folks being taught in Milwaukee, officers who needed education. And, like, we were on it all over the place when we opened here.
Unheard of, by the way. And right. People think, well, what's the big deal? That idea of night classes, the right. Idea of going to the students, completely unorthodox for the time.
Yes. And so that was how we came to Kenosha. And then over time, again, the demographics were good, more people coming out of high school. We lost, I would say, some of that entrepreneurial urge and that critical thinking meets critical need. And then we had become a little more comfortable offering what we were doing because, again, it was working. People were coming. School was growing. Love it. But at 2017, it was time to ask that question again. Is it time to return to some of the real strengths we had in the past and bring them back? And I would definitely say this is one of those times.
Now nursing, your number one major.
Yes.
That's what I heard.
Yes, it is number one if you think of a single major. However, if you were to look at students who are taking at least one major in one of our several business departments, then you would see that about a quarter are coming through one of those: management, marketing, accounting, finance, economics. And so, yes, for a single major, it's nursing. Now, that may change. It may be engineering next because we've started that. But I will say, back to your question on the conversation, there was a lot of conversation about whether it was really necessary because this can be disruptive, expanding. Faculty and staff can have natural questions about it. But by now, looking back, it's clear it was the right thing for Carthage. It was the right thing for our students. So from my perspective, no one's worried about that anymore. They're so glad we have nursing. And I also want to say, Carthage alumni, when we poll them, they're always about, of course you would add new programs. Of course you would meet needs. So this was more of an internal discussion than it was a Carthage community discussion externally.
I will tell you, my wife was a professor of nursing for 8 years. And wished that she had the quality of students to work with that Carthage College does. And she's on the floor. She's an OB nurse. Mm-hmm. And she went back to the floor, and she mentors some of your nursing students and is amazed at the quality that comes through that nursing school.
Well, thank you, Bob. I mean, we like to say that, you know, future doctors should be liberal arts educated. Future nurses should be liberal arts educated. Engineers. It's not an either or between being broadly educated and thinking critically and having a profession. And that's exactly what we'd want to see.
So that's a great segue, because education overall over the last 10 years, 12 years, maybe it's been longer and I didn't see it. It's lost credibility. People question the need that you should go to college at all. There are millionaires out there that are paying people not to go to college, to just go in and start your whatever you want to do to start your own business right now. How do you feel? I mean, it's easy for me because I look and say, even with a PhD, I didn't know everything. So at least I knew something. I knew some questions to be able to ask. I don't know if I could have done that as an 18-year-old.
Oh, that's such an important topic, not only here but across the country. Like a lot of institutions in this country, there's been a loss of trust. I mean, whether you look at Congress or you look at big business or you look at big tech, and higher education is no stranger to this. It's kind of become a political football. It's been talked about so much on the left and the right. And underlying that, of course, there is concern. And I would say that the deepest concern is that some families and some graduates have been disappointed in what they think their education was able to do for them in terms of opportunity. Some of them felt that they paid too much for what had come after. So that is a real issue. The value proposition is a real issue. Some schools are better at this than others. However, I do worry that we get locked in some debates that are frankly unproductive. Two-year versus four-year, should people go to college at all? If you look right now, the number of open jobs is enormous. The unemployment rate's been driven down. Companies are screaming for people at all levels. And so, you know, the idea about, you know, the trades versus four-year degrees, we can have that conversation, but the truth is we need more people everywhere. And the most worrisome thing is that coming out of the pandemic here in Kenosha, the college going rate, by which I mean people who left high school, graduated, and then started pursuing any post-secondary education, so Gateway, Parkside, Carthage, it's dropped 20 percentage points. Racine's worse. Across the state of Wisconsin, it's still about 10 percentage points down. There is no way our economy, broadly construed, here in Wisconsin or elsewhere, can prosper if fewer and fewer people are getting any post-secondary education. So I want us to stop arguing about how we're going to move people around within post-secondary education. Just remind people that it is good for them, it is good for our economy, it is good for their families to have some education on some path and get a return.
So let's go back. You brought up the idea of fewer people going to school. This reared its ugly head maybe 3 weeks to a month ago. Woke up this that particular day, Monday morning, and my phone was blowing up. A number of my friends, a number of my colleagues, sending me the article about Cardinal Stritch. I know you're not involved with them, but there's a lot of similarities. Both religious based, small liberal arts. And the first thing that came to my mind is I'm thrilled because I know the numbers continue to go up at Carthage. Mm-hmm. You came across my mind, and partially that's selfish. What are your thoughts? Why? And then we're going to get – and maybe you could touch on 60 days. Mm-hmm. I've seen and been involved in a school that they had 2 years – to be able to find what was going on. But 60 days, that was shocking to me.
Yes, and it is shocking and it's very saddening. I will say, if you had looked externally at a list of private institutions in Wisconsin and you had looked at the enrollment change over 5 years, you wouldn't have been surprised that they were in such a fragile position. So Cardinal Stritch had lost half their full-time enrollment over 5 years.
I'll stop. This is per Google. Mm-hmm. 48 colleges closed in 2022, 35 colleges in 2021. I had no idea that there were so many schools of higher education with those financial troubles.
That's right. I will say that there's a lot going on in the marketplace, and there is upside in that families are receiving more financial aid overall. In other words, they're paying on average, and this is true at Carthage, less than they were than a decade ago. We're actually receiving in fees on average per student less than a decade ago, and that's not adjusting for inflation. So We've been working on the cost problem for quite a while. But as that makes every school try to compete with the others to enroll students, at some point, if you take in too little revenue, you can't meet expenses. And these colleges are businesses like everything else. After a while, it's just not going to work. And particularly if you've taken out debt, the bank may come calling and say, you know, there were covenants about this. If you look at the Stritch situation and just look at their public financial statements, they had had six different amendments to their debt since 2018. So before the pandemic, they were having trouble. Pandemic, on one hand, helped because there was federal relief, but that's all going away. And then it just calls the question, have you reached a new level of stability? And they hadn't. Now, 60 days is tough. It's tough on many, many people. And I'll say in higher education, because it's so rare, or has been rare, for colleges to close, it's very hard for boards to reach a conclusion that, you know, maybe in a year or two we'd have to stop. So let's do the best thing to wind this down over 2 years. It's very hard. People are so invested. It's so unique. You could ask, are there more mergers and acquisitions? I think there will be. But it's a lot easier in the for-profit sector than the nonprofit sector, where people are so invested in their individual operation. And so a very forward-looking board might take the decision that this is just not going to work for 2 years, and so we should stop now. But there's always the hope that somebody will come in and rescue you.
White knight.
Yes, and even in the Stritch case, you know, my friend Dan Schultz, who took over as president at, you know, a year ago, there was a generous donor who provided $3 million at his inauguration. But it wasn't enough. And so these are the hard realities. People can be so wishful about what might happen, but at some point you have to be a realist and ask yourself always what's best for the students.
Let's touch on the students. Because what happens? 60 days, they're going to graduate their students. Usually, it takes 2 years at a college to be able to graduate from it. In other words, I can't go to a small liberal arts college, finish my junior year, transfer to Harvard, and get a Harvard diploma in 12 months. And there's good reason for that. Financial, I mean, let's be honest about that, from the colleges, as well as do you learn enough about that particular school of higher education to be able to graduate from it? What happens to these students? What are their options? I know that UWM has offered some, I don't know what it is. I heard that Marquette, which makes sense, they were both Catholic in basis. Is Carthage offering, and what is being offered, and have you heard how will these students, where will they be going?
Yes. Well, I'll back up a bit and say that a friend of mine had suggested that the 18 institutions, or now 17 institutions in and around Milwaukee in the seven counties, meet and talk about how to serve Stritch students. And when my friend said that, it reminded me that we haven't communicated as well as we could about the intense competition that's happening. So what I told my friend is, within hours, all those schools were trying to figure out, could we help these students, as in enroll them? And so, you know, yes, Marquette, UWM, Concordia, Carthage. I mean, within hours, we were advertising on campus with geofenced social media ads because we would like to help, because we would like to enroll students and do well by them. It's also true that as we have worked with some of them, some of the offers they were given, and every student fully deserves as much as they can get, but it's simply not affordable. I mean, there has to be a floor. We have to earn some money in order to educate a student. And some of the situations have just been very tough to match because I don't know how Cardinal Stritch was ever going to make it work given what they were discounting in order to enroll students.
Sure.
But, you know, going back to some of those rules about, you know, the difficulty of transfer, having to be at school for a certain number of years. I think there's a group of schools, and it's very small, you know, very elite, extremely selective, that can continue to have those rules. But the rest of the post-secondary system is going to make transfer easier, things are going to lean toward making it more likely for students to transfer, retain, graduate, because it's in everyone's interest. So some of those, let's just call them traditions of the past, I think are going to fall away. For instance, our faculty this year said, passed a resolution that if you have an AA or an AS degree from any two-year institution anywhere in the country, your general education requirements are done. Now, this is very leading edge, I would say.
I'd say that's very forward thinking.
Very forward thinking. But I think you'll see a lot more of it because I think everyone has to ask themselves, would you rather be educating students or not? And then where are they going to come from? And so we are all about trying to educate more students at a high level of quality. And we do not want to discriminate on where they come from and tell somebody that because their circumstances meant that they went to a two-year school that somehow they're behind. Look, we all come from different circumstances, and Carthage wants to play a role in every student's education.
Let's talk about the students that graduated. Is their degree worth less? How do they get, if they want to go to grad school, how do they get a transcript? I said I have a little bit of experience, and I received two transcripts in the mail. And say this is what you're getting because we're closing. How do you find your faculty after they leave to get the letters of recommendation? How ideas?
Well, some of this
say, people they don't realize you come from an operations provost background, unlike so many other presidents of other colleges.
Yes. Yes. Well, some of this is under regulation and the wind down of an institution following Department of Education guidelines and accreditation. They still have some assets. It's not like they have no assets. And they will seek to provide other schools to their students that can finish out their degrees. That's one thing. Another one is take their academic records. Fold them into their system so that somebody can be written somewhere and a transcript could be issued. I don't know which school they may choose, but I have no doubt that it'll get folded into some institution's system. And so, no, it might say the former Cardinal Stritch. But you're right. When it comes to those other things, sometimes the less tangible ones, how do I go back and talk to my faculty member and get a recommendation? It'll just be on a personal basis. And that is hard. I think we'll all need to get used to the fact that some schools may not be here and then have sort of backwards-looking judgments on, were they of good quality and so on. I don't think it's the end of the world for those students in terms of they've done something terribly wrong by going to Stritch. But they will have to transfer or finish or figure out the transcripts, and they will have to explain to graduate schools that it was a highly respected institution for 80 years and then it closed.
Cardinal Stritch, known for teaching. So
yes.
The first thing I said to my wife was, State of Wisconsin, are they going to question their accreditation? And how will that potentially affect licensing?
Mm-hmm.
Here's an example in Florida where there's questions about the accreditation for a nursing school in Florida that the state of Florida authorized, and these nurses have now gone nationwide. And the big question is, do they, because they pass state boards,
mm-hmm.
like teachers.
Yes.
Do they really have a degree or not? And does it matter or not? Because they're already in that particular field and working.
It's a good question. I like to put my emphasis on what an individual actually knows and the experience they have. And so to me, if a nurse has passed the NCLEX, and they have experience in a hospital, I would worry a lot less about wherever they went to school. But these are questions we're going to have to face. So I have a little bit of a personal bias because I didn't receive a high school diploma. I left high school early, and somehow it's worked out for me. People have not thought that's the end of the world. But yes, these things, and they come into the category of maybe consumer protection. There have been regulations that have been trying to assure people who enter the higher education marketplace that they're getting something worthwhile. as there's all this disruption, we're going to have to look at those things. Were they really protecting anyone? Does it really matter on both sides? Government never acts as fast as the market does.
Right.
And so accreditation was meant to kind of give schools early signals that they were in financial trouble. The Department of Education score would go down. They would be talked to. The federal government would eventually say, well, we're not going to fund financial aid. But when things happen fast, it's as if none of that was there.
You mentioned financial aid. As of taping, Supreme Court has not made a decision. A lot of my friends that have gone to Carthage that wind up as attorneys, a lot of my friends, I do a lot of expert witness, so I get to talk to attorneys. They're saying it's well more than 50-50 that the Supreme Court throws this out. And we go back to paying student loans as of September 1st. How does that affect higher education? How does it affect Carthage?
So not in a great sense. You know, if there had been, you know, a one-time elimination of debt, I think, you know, that would be a windfall for a certain group of people, but it really wouldn't affect the students who are coming. I mean, none of this was ever going to be permanent. And so the holders of student loan debt, you know, would be more at risk if there's been a long pause and people might have trouble paying it when it comes back.
It's been three years.
Yes. That's right.
People have gone out and created other obligations with the money that they would have normally paid that student loan off with.
That's right. And so we don't have a significant, you know, direct loan program to students, so we're not particularly worried on that score.
But there are colleges that do, right?
Yes.
I mean, because they're normally getting – I don't know what the rate is right now on a direct loan type of situation, but it used to be – back in the day, I'm showing the age here, right around 8%, which in this environment is still a healthy interest rate. So, you know, does it stop? Do people feel that education is less worthwhile because they're not going to get anything forgiven? Do people feel cheated? Do students look and say, let's go back, because I sent you a question, and the question was, the amount that you borrow, should that somehow be tied to what you are majoring in? Let's look at my family. I have everything from a drama and art major to nurses to one that has that received his degree in fiction writing and poetry. Dad told him unemployment, and wound up with a master's from DePaul in public administration and works in Washington, D.C. Do we look at a major and say, you have a right to get this major, we want you because society is better with you? Artists. Think of no music, no art, all scientists. World would be kind of boring. But should we give you less money to graduate because historically you're going to make less money after you graduate?
Great questions. Well, first, we have such a diversity of families coming through post-secondary education. For some, loans are a great bet. They're even apart from the field. If you were a bank, you would give them a low interest rate because of assets they have, because of a track record, and so on. And then you have people who are really struggling to go to college, and a small thing could set them off. And so the pool of people that we're trying to work with is really highly diverse. And so when you start asking about, are loans good for everybody? Well, no. They're not. And part of it is that it makes a lot of sense to borrow money against an asset that you can trade from day to day, like your house. I mean, if you get stuck, you can sell the house. The bank knows that, or they'll sell it for you, and then everything's going to work out. But this is borrowing against a presumed future income stream that may or may not happen. And so there are a lot of choices that person's going to make. Now, you could say, well, can we do this by major? I think there's value in that, and actually it makes a lot of sense in graduate programs. I mean, you know, if you want to get an MBA, I think you can get an easy loan for it, no problem. Same is true for medical school. But at least the way we've set up our system, where for 4 years you might make different choices, it's hard to say at the front end that the person should have no access to loans because they haven't decided or because they were thinking one way and then they changed their mind in another. That's what we worry about. What if somebody changes their mind in the middle? Do they lose the loan? Is it immediately payable?
And you have to work. What percentage of people work inside of their major?
I remember
when I went to school,
yes,
they came out and said only 5% actually work inside their major.
So there's a lot of that. And also, as we all know, people are moving from job to job and even field to field more often, more quickly. So you might want to see some alignment between the major and the first job and the second job. But to expect that somebody who starts out, you know, in nursing is necessarily going to end in nursing. I mean, my mom started out a violist and ended up an alcohol and drug abuse counselor. No prediction for that. So that's one of the questions. One of our students in, comes from Illinois. She came to Carthage to be a neuroscience major. That's what she thought. Then she was thinking maybe biology. She works during Carthage, as a lot of our students do, and I don't think that's fully appreciated. And so one program we've started is to try to find ways for our students who are working to earn more, because sometimes they don't realize how much you can earn. So we connect her up with LMI Packaging. She works on the line, earning quite a bit more than she was working in retail. But then she spent some time in their finance office. She started to like manufacturing, never thought she would. And now she's been hired, like she's graduating, she'll be a financial specialist at LMI. She's not working at the line, but she like is coming up through their accounting office. Well, you look at that. She's making all sorts of good choices along the way. She had no idea when she started that that's where she might end up. And so how do we assign a risk to her about whether we should give her a loan at the beginning?
Right. Yeah, and because everything changes.
Right.
Dreams change. Dreams, needs
yes.
change.
Needs change, yes.
And there used to be, and I don't know, you can tell us, when my mom and dad, I'm a first generation college graduate, when my mom and dad graduated from high school, you got married, you had a family, my mom was a waitress at the downtown Dutch Maid, Kenosha, okay,
mm-hmm.
Dad worked at Dynamatic, mm-hmm. With heavy assembly, mm-hmm. and so that was what their life was going to be. When I went to school, they said, go into something that's going to make you more money.
Right.
When my kids went to school, I said, find your passion. Because if you're the best at what you do and you're passionate about it, the money will find you. What does the next generation say?
So the backdrop to this is how wide do we see opportunity for graduates? And, you know, you were mentioning the year you came out, right?
88.
Yeah, I didn't want to say that for you. of course, you couldn't have predicted some of the things that would have happened. And I think we all do want to believe that there is time and space to be at a residential college, to think about the passion, where you want to go, and that there will be ample jobs in the field of choice. There's so much that's changing. And then, frankly, and I don't know if you experienced this, but some families are in fragile situations, and the smallest thing can set somebody off.
Sure.
Off track.
Been there. Opened my own business.
Right.
Yes.
Right.
5 kids.
Right. And
yes.
So it's so hard to know what to say to all students. I mean, I had an idea recently. I discussed this with some alumni about giving students, let's say halfway through, a color evaluation of how they're doing based on how much they're taking out money, what they're majoring in, whether they've gotten an internship, and so on. because this alumna was saying we shouldn't even teach certain things that they don't likely pay off. And I said, well, frankly, if some parents have some money and they want to spend it on their child and the child wants to do this and they're not taking out any money, any debt, I'm providing something they want, everything's great. But for another student who's taking out a lot of money and it's not going to pay off, that could be bad. And so maybe I should give one, you know, like a green light and one a red light or a yellow light at least. And that made this alumna feel uncomfortable that we would be telling people that it maybe this major is okay for this person, but it's not okay for you in your particular circumstance. But it could be reality.
14 years of teaching economics. I taught at Carthage. I've taught here at Gateway, some places between Milwaukee and Chicago. And that is my first class. I talk about what is fair, and I'm doing the air quotes right now. And that is one of the things that we talk about in every class, because I said economics is a study of why and how we spend.
That's right.
So how do we spend our future income through education? Speaking of econ, because we have 9 minutes, and I should tell everybody we have President John Swallow from Carthage College. A huge thank you. We've got about 9 minutes left. We're going to talk about the future. Odds are, as an economist, we're going to see a recession. Most of us agree on that. If it's not a recession, it's going to be a significant slowdown. Mm-hmm. Where do colleges go? Where does Carthage go in the next 1 to 5 years if we do see that downturn in the economy?
Mm-hmm. Well, colleges are based on revenue sources. And so the first thing we have to mention is that some colleges have different levels of an endowment. And so if the economy is slowing down or going backwards, how's that going to affect that? Well, the first thing to say about that is most colleges average out the endowment value over time. And we use 5 years. So a 1 or 2 year dip is not going to cause a sudden change in what we draw from it. So that's the first thing, because we want to smooth that out over time. A lot of economic cycles going on. So then when it comes to students and what we can provide, how many students we have, how much we charge, what student opportunities there are. To me, a lot depends on whether the unemployment rate actually rises a lot. It's so low. We have five times as many open jobs as we did in 2010 across the country. So there's a possibility that we may be in a bona fide recession, but still companies have lots of open jobs.
Never happened before.
Right.
Right.
So in that case, what we would do is ask ourselves, can we help companies hire more people? Can we help them provide maybe education as a benefit? With LMI packaging, we're trying an idea called Carthage Spark, where the provision of education on-site in the workplace, paid for by the employer, will be a recruitment tool to get labor. Because LMI packaging said they could do so much more business if they just had people. So they're willing to partner with us to try this out, happy to advance the education of employees, but ultimately it's because they can get more work done and their business can grow. Now, if the unemployment rate gets really high, that's different. In that case, we would presume that there would be more people seeking some sort of education to move from the job they lost into the job they're going to go to, and they might think that they need sort of a level up. And so then we would probably do a different sort of adult program. So much depends on the hiring market as opposed to the economy as a whole.
You brought the adult program. Is there a place for the old-fashioned four-year Bobby goes off to college at 18, graduates at 21 or 22, gets to be a member of a fraternity, the old-fashioned typical experience? Is it going away? And how, and boy, I'm throwing this at the last minute on you, is if we look at it, did COVID cause that with the idea of doing everything online?
It's true. Like we've said, there's only growing scrutiny on higher education, the value provided, and so on. However, my experience is that, yes, more people for value reasons may choose to pursue an online education and so on. But I don't think it's ever going to go away that a lot of families and students will want a four-year residential experience. And I can tell you why. I'd actually appreciate it now a little more after COVID. There's a lot that feels like direct content delivery. That's where online, you know, may be helpful over time. But there's still a lot of the in-person experience that is valuable. Some people learn a lot better, frankly, when there's somebody else in the room and they have friends studying the same thing.
And relationships.
And relationships. And there's another level, which I appreciate now so much. There are things that happen in a residential college that you just can't do at home. One of them is play football. One of them is being in an orchestra. One of them is being in a student group around a cause. Like, all of those things are much harder if you're sitting at home and you have to create them on your own and connect to people. Our students, by and large, they love those experiences. So music theater brings students. Athletics brings students. We have over 100 student organizations. They love those. And so, yes, even apart from the direct delivery of curriculum and content, that sort of experience, which is a learning environment, and they do grow and develop, that is worth paying for.
Yeah. The part that bothers me the most about this and are the relationships. Professors... Tom Knorr.
Yes.
Dr. Knorr, maybe the most incredible professor that I've ever had. Through grad school, it doesn't matter. He's that good. History professor.
Mm-hmm.
He'd have a Christmas party.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody would go there, and you'd sit around, and you'd hear the stories.
Yes.
You'd hear, he was a summer with the head of the NAACP and how they had to crawl through the living room because they were afraid, and where the police meant to look at inside the car to make sure that there wasn't a bomb. To experience that is not something that you can ever get online. So, I mean, I can talk about Tom Knorr. I can talk about Bob Schlack from the econ department. I can talk about Neuenschwander, who was a judge in town and does appellate work. There's so many. And you go back to the high school, you know, a Mary Snyder here was one of the teachers. A huge life-changing experience. You don't get that online.
No. No, you don't. And yes, you could have a sort of celebrity faculty member online who doesn't know you, and maybe some of this is recorded. But no, you're not going to get that interchange, and you're not going to get that lifelong connection that you look back on and say, that's just part of how I became who I am. I mean, if people think people grow and develop as humans simply by acquiring content from a workbook in a class, I mean, it's far more than that. We know that, right?
It is.
Yes. The relationships, I mean, in my own case, watching my children, certain relationships they had with teachers in high school determined so much. It's not that the schools were good or bad, but those people made a connection and inspired and motivated them. And so when we have faculty that can do that, it makes an enormous difference in the students' lives.
We've got 2 minutes. I'm going to give you the last word. What do you want people to know about Carthage College?
That we are here to provide students from all backgrounds additional opportunity for their lives, and that's everything that we're doing every day.
Professor Swallow, thank you so much for joining us. One of the quickest 42 minutes that I can remember. And this is Education Matters. I'm Bob Hagerty. We will see you soon.
You've been listening to Education Matters, heard Saturday mornings at 10:30 here on WGTD. Archive programs are available on our website at WGTD.org.
The Gateway Radio Reading Service is for visually impaired listeners who would like to have newspapers and books read to them. In the Kenosha Racine area, easy-to-operate radios are available free of charge. Visit WGTD.org or call 564-3744.
I'm Gregory Berg. The studios of WGTD will be closed on Monday before Memorial Day, so there will be no morning show broadcast. But the morning show will be available as a podcast, and it will feature a memorable conversation with Patrick K. O'Donnell, talking about his amazing book, The Unknowns, the untold story of America's unknown soldier and World War I's most decorated heroes who brought him home. To find the podcast, look for The Morning Show with Greg Berg.
This is WGTD HD, serving Kenosha, Racine, Elkhorn,